Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to the Stand Podcast on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Jim Dacian. I'm author of the book Stay Up Los Angeles Street Art. And I am very, very excited to have Desire Payne Cherish on the phone with me today. I met Desire Payne Cherish about a year ago to the date. I visited his studio when I was doing research for this book, and I was incredibly impressed with his background in music, design, and advertising, and how he's really pulled upon all these aspects of his life into his artwork. So first of all, let me welcome you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. I was just thinking about this morning that it is almost a year to the date. I think it was about 2 days ago, the same date that we spent about an hour and a half in your studio just talking about your work, your upcoming show, and about your background.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun.
It's been a very long year, it seems. Wow.
Yeah, you've done a lot, and I want to kind of get into that. But just for listeners to sort of get a little bit of an introduction to you, can you tell them about the name Desire Obtain Cherish and a little bit of how you got into this crazy world of street art?
Okay. Well, the way it started, about 3 years ago, I had gone out with a friend of mine, another street artist named Benjamin Alejandro, and he and I were out weed pacing one night, and at the time I was promoting the music that I was doing, which is, you know, electro kind of dubstep stuff. And I just kind of began to get immersed into what other guys were putting on the street. And to be quite honest, I didn't really like a lot of it. There were a few that really stood out, but most of it just kind of seemed like, you know, a bunch of guys Xeroxing stuff, putting it out there without too much thought. And I didn't want to be one of those guys. So I do have an extensive background. I've done quite a few things, and the words Desire, Pain, Cherish kind of came from, A, my love of what I was doing, and my love of the kind of ironic cycle of consumerism, of what the billboards tell us, which is, you know, desire this, obtain it, cherish it, you know, you're going to like this, buy this, and you're going to love this. And at the same time, it's also kind of our cycle of the way we live, whether it's a girlfriend, you know, you want her and you get her, you love her, something we buy. It's also, you know, street art itself. You know, you see it on the street, you like it, you want it, and you want it around you. So the three words just kind of extended off of that. It seemed a bit unusual, and it seemed a bit different than what other people were doing. So I started pasting just the three words for months on end all over town, and I guess it started to resonate with people. People started to go, who is this and what is this? What does it mean?
Yeah. And so when did you take it to the next level then after pasting it up? That's you become known for these large billboard takeovers. So what was the next step in taking that work to the next level?
You know, I don't know exactly what it was. I was still doing images and words at the time. There was at one point I was driving down the street and a billboard from a movie kind of captivated me. It was the Adjustment Bureau and had this ominous picture of this guy with a hat on, and you didn't really see his face. And it's very graphic, and I'm naturally drawn to very kind of simple messages. And I saw it and I thought, wow, how hard would that be to paint over the type and just put my three words right over his face as big as possible. And I did a little research, climbed up there one night, did a bunch of measurements. I actually clipped a swatch of the billboard to match the paint, went to Home Depot, bought a couple of gallons of paint, and went out there by myself one night. It took about 4 hours and painted over the board. I learned a lot from doing that one, that was for sure. Paint doesn't dry very good on vinyl. Takes a long time, and I mapped out the words and did the 200 feet of Kinko's outputs and went up there and pasted it all up and took a few pictures and sent it out to a couple of blogs and kind of took off from there.
Yeah, so obviously the reaction, the online reaction, because that's how I first saw it. I saw the video, mm-hmm. and then I saw it on, I think, Melrose and Fairfax or some one of the blogs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the community loves it. But then what kind of negative reaction have you gotten from pieces like that?
You know, nothing that anyone has told me. I hijacked a Stella billboard.
Yeah.
Basically just kind of red spray paint and went up there and changed the words. They just blocked out the logo and changed the words to first the sex tape, then rehab, then the reality show, sweetheart. And just an image of a girl and a man looking at each other over this glass of beer. And apparently I knew one person that worked for Saatchi & Saatchi, and they ended up taking the billboard, and one of the creatives ended up taking it home with them. I guess they liked the board so much that they took it back.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And then I believe, did they just put up the same billboard then right afterwards, correct?
They did, yeah, exactly. They put up the same one, blanked out.
Yeah, I think that's amazing, because you think about the illegal nature of it and the repercussion, but then it becomes a collector's item, and it's just, it's par for the course. You just put up the same billboard.
Sure, yeah, you don't expect it. Definitely, as an artist, you expect it to be up for a day or two until someone notices it and for it to be gone, but most of the boards I've done have actually lasted more than 30 days.
That's incredible. Well, also, your billboards have that professional appearance that some don't.
Thank
right?
you.
So, I mean, the fact that you went up and measured seems you, I mean, you're pretty good at planning these things out.
Sure, yeah. Planning is everything for me. It's got to be done well or I don't want to do it.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of your MOs in terms of, I think, all your work, even the gallery work. It has this pristine finish that just, it's pretty impeccable.
Thank you.
Well, cool. I think this actually transitions well into something that you've been a big part of is this campaign against illegal billboards in Los Angeles. And I've seen a poster of yours, I think I've seen a sticker, and a billboard takeover that basically says, is this illegal? And then there are over 4,000 illegal billboards in LA. Can you tell us about, you know, the origins of that and what the, you know, what the big deal is?
Sure. There was a couple of online producers that work for Pharrell's. It's got an online YouTube channel, and they go out and do these kind of avant-garde, video broadcasts that they produce, and they got a bunch of us street artists together and pitched the idea to us, and I instantly fell in love, only because I have probably the only guy in the group that actually have created billboards for clients. I must have put up at least 100 billboards for various clients over the years, from design to execution and concept to shooting to purchasing the billboard. I know, you know, the locations, how much they cost, everything. And even at the time, I was very well aware that a lot of this stuff was done without permits, and that the billboard companies were out there just kind of building these things furiously around town. But I guess I didn't understand the scale that how kind of, I guess you could say, corrupt or inept the city hall people are in monitoring these billboards. So when they had done all that research and presented it to me, I was quite fascinated with the fact that they estimated there was like 4,000 of these. Some are quite obvious. The ones that are on liquor stores that say, come inside for cash and prizes or whatever the posters are you see on the building. You know, those are quite obvious that they've worked a loophole around a permitting process and are not paying anybody for those things. But the amount of billboards, especially the ones on the 110, I think they've estimated there's about 30 of them that they just built in the last 3 years that are up there, one after the other that are illegal. So I was quite fascinated with it, and I thought, you know, I'm definitely on board. The message I like. I wanted to be a bit more creative in the takeover itself, but I think they were pretty much, they really want to get this message out, just really simple, really clean, type only. And just put out the simple message. So I kind of adhered to their guidelines and got a bunch of guys together and went out and did some boards one night. And it was a lot of fun. I don't know what has really come because of it, but, maybe a little bit of awareness. Certainly in the street art community, there's a bigger awareness. As far as the public at large, I don't know. I mean, I think you'd have to take over at least 100 billboards in town to really get your message across. And that might take a lot more work.
Yeah, you don't actually think of street artists sort of teaming together with, you know, another entity to get these ideas across. So there's all sorts of stereotypes, at least romantic stereotypes, I suppose, I even had when I began this project. You think it's under the cover of darkness, it's one person, but again, everything you even shared with me this morning isn't true. You usually start with a friend. Someone shows you the ropes. You enter it into a group. Most likely there is some sort of community of support for you to keep doing that. And then it's highly organized on almost all fronts, because if it isn't, it's not going to work very well, and it's not going to come off.
Sure.
It's not going to be lasting in that way.
Yeah. If you're out there alone trying to do this on your own, it's next to impossible, and or you're just going to stay so far below the radar that if you're not really part of the community, you know, like with any sort of art movement whatsoever, it's, you know, movements come because there's a community of like-minded people. And you know, it just so happens that now it is, the eyes are on the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've also transitioned into, well, I wouldn't even say transition. I think you developed in the gallery scene right alongside all of this. I mean, you're very upfront about, you have an art background, you got your bachelor's, you studied on both coasts, and in a very conceptual manner. So you have a very postmodern education. It's not as though you came to this from traditional sort of schooling per se. That'd be correct, right?
That is correct.
And so you've been involved with a number of street art galleries, at least the way they dubbed themselves, the street art galleries. I mean, how have you found that scene as you sort of make your way amongst it?
I was originally asked last year, the first time I actually did a show was last year, with a group of street artists, and I was more than happy just to be included or to be asked. I felt like that was an honor that somebody recognized me. You do feel alone a lot of the time. And it was a pleasure to show with these guys. You know, I instantly realized that time I just tried to take the ideas that I was doing on the street and translate them literally into gallery. I was a little disappointed with the results that I came with. Although everybody seemed to like it, I just felt like I could do better. And then Lab Art came along, Iskander, and he had kind of grouped about 20 of us together and started his gallery on La Brea there and asked me to do a solo show pretty much a few months right after they opened, which really put the fire under my ass, so to speak. I had 4 weeks to prepare a show. He wanted me to take a very large space. I figured to fill the walls, I needed about 40 pieces of work, which I didn't have any. And got a bunch of my friends together and sat down in 4 weeks and did 44 pieces of work for the solo show. And I was a little apprehensive about it because I started to deal with ideas that were a little bit out of the range of what traditional street artists do, since I do have a fine art background. And I kind of felt odd about it because I felt like I really put the bullseye on a target that exists above street art yet below fine art, and I really missed communicating to quite a few people. Some people were very confused at what I was doing. And not a lot of that work actually sold in the first month that it was up, and I felt it was a giant disappointment at the time, looking back. But things have changed since then, and grown.
Tell me how they've changed, because that's interesting, because I visited you when you were planning for that show. You were very excited.
That's correct.
I saw your concept wall, which, again, you had a concept wall, which not many people do, which I thought was fantastic. I mean, you planned it out as though it was this large production. So you weren't happy. Yeah. So how has it changed then since then?
Well, you know, as with, I think, any artist that struggles, you don't only struggle with the personal ideas, but you also struggle with whether this work is going to sell or not. It's very difficult to produce the kind of work I was doing because it had a tendency to cost a lot. if you're not selling it, it's kind of like, you know, you can go broke very, very quick, which defeats the purpose. But I'd done a couple of pieces, and the month the show was open, I don't think I sold more than three pieces out of the 44 pieces that I had done. And within a few months after the show, I guess the people liked the work enough because I was immediately asked by three or four other people to do shows and to be in a few other galleries, and they ended up taking some of the work that I produced for that show, and I started to produce more work. And little by little, it began to sell, and getting the feedback from the gallery owners and getting the feedback from the public began to, I guess, shape the kind of dialogue I was having with them as far as how many ideas I can put into one piece and to try to educate them as to what I was trying to say. I think that I'm very obvious in my work, but from what people tell me, my work is not so obvious, and it does take a little bit of explanation. So that's been a very interesting learning curve. I went on to do Art Basel that year, I think with another gallery in Miami, and they've been very helpful in developing my ideas. It really has a tendency to push me in all the right ways when we're working together. So it's been fascinating and huge. You know, we're looking at, I don't want to say getting away from street art, because it really excites me to be on the streets, to do instant work. You get a different thrill than you certainly do from walking into a sterile gallery with a bunch of people drinking wine, and that does not excite me as much as it is on being on the street, but still trying to find that delicate balance between communicating to the public, but yet taking an idea and being able to communicate it to something that's a little more everlasting is the fine art world, where you can actually begin to make your mark on history, so to speak. And it's just a challenge. So that's kind of what I'm shooting for.
Yeah, it is a challenge. And I think one marker in there that is nice to demonstrate the significance of street art or this movement or this genre and what's happening is the involvement with art fairs, like you said, in Art Basel.
Mm-hmm.
And art fairs in the art world have become this gatekeeper for getting to the next level. So galleries are judged on what fairs they're going to, and the more fairs or the higher level of fair that you're involved with, all those artists are then on that level as well. And so each year, like last year at Art Basel, I think I could count a dozen artists that were down there that were involved with street art in some way. So it's to discount it would be ridiculous, because it's there and it's already competing at the highest level. So yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's pretty absolutely. It was something I was not familiar with at all. I've been to Art Basel many times, but I certainly never looked at it as any of the work I was doing as a street artist would be able to compete in such an arena. For me, I had high, you know, I held that show very high in my mind, and it's quite fascinating that it seems that this undercurrent has infiltrated. This year especially, there's about 30 of us street artists that are going to be participating in Art Basel, and I've already zoned and gotten some walls on Northwest 2nd there in Glenwood, so there'll be a very big representation of L.A. street artists. We have an entire wall secured, so we're going to go out there and hit it as a community.
Yeah. I love that. I think it's one of the reasons I love street art is this alternative way to enter the art world, or or just, and it's working. And these old formulas have changed, and street artists have sort of eradicated these older paths that we were all taught in graduate school or undergraduate school. So it's
it's a really wonderful makes sense thing. Though. It makes sense. I mean, if you really think about art as throughout history, it's kind of everybody likes the bad boy. Everybody likes the guy that's breaking the rules. Everybody likes the guy that's doing it wrong. They may not like the work, but they certainly like the attitude and the bravado that comes with it,
Yeah. No, that's true. Well, the last thing I wanted to mention before letting you go is the identity factor. I think when I met you, folks weren't familiar with what your real name was. When I was doing my research, I thought you were a collective, because you referred to yourself as we or our group, or even online other groups writing about Desire Obtain Cherish referred to it as a collective. And so I was really mm-hmm. surprised to meet you. You know, first of all, when you see the person for the first time, like, holy, okay, it's one person. That doesn't mm-hmm. make sense. But then to see you on television, and then even mm-hmm. on your website, I mean, it says AKA mm-hmm. Jonathan Paul. And online, mm-hmm. it's not very difficult to figure out who you are. Mm-hmm. Can you say a little bit about that?
Sure. I think the words themselves are deceiving. I certainly never set out to be an artist called Desire Team Cherish, you know. I've lost myself in a way, which is great, and it's not a path I chose, but, you know, I'll accept it for what it is. I always use the word we because a lot of what I do takes many people to do. I don't look at making art as a singular process. I'm not a painter. I don't sit in front of a canvas and diligently work 40 hours on completing a piece. Therefore, I feel like I own it. A lot of what I do is come from a community base, and a lot of the ways I go about making art now is still with the community. I have quite a few assistants. I am very interested in helping them along with, you know, them helping me. Everything I do, I look at as a collective of we because it's not about Jonathan Paul anymore. It's about Desire, Obtain, Cherish. And I look to other artists that are, you know, changing the movement, that are, you know, doing work that exists way beyond themselves. I don't really have a personal attachment to what I'm doing. I'm much more interested in affecting the art world or the street art world, and I cannot do that alone. I can't go out at night into the billboard alone, nor can I make the work alone, and nor can I sell it in a gallery alone. There's really nothing about it that I can do myself. It's always a collective attitude. I don't really have a problem with people mistaking it for a collective. I think it's better. I like the ambiguity of it. It just doesn't bother me at all. Nothing any of us can do selfishly gets us really anywhere. I've always kind of approached things as, you know, I need you and you need me, and let's do this together and let's do it right.
Yeah. And has there ever been legal ramifications in terms of folks, you know, tracking you down for something that you've done, or has it just been a non-issue?
I was worried about it at first, only because everyone else was worried about it. I think after a while I realized that if I happen to get arrested for doing something involved in street art, then it's just par for the course. It's not, you know, it's not as scary as it might seem. It's simply kind of the nature of being an artist these days. I'm not trying to hide from anybody. I'm also not doing things that are extremely illegal per se. I'm not really destroying things, and I'm very careful about where I paint and what I put up. And if I take over a billboard, it's really, you know, it's a corporate private property, much, much less than it is somebody's house, you know. So, you know, I guess I've lost the fear. In addition to that, I think when you're dealing with galleries and you're dealing with the art world themselves, you know, they want to know who is the man behind the curtain. You know, so a lot of that has been confronting me. I've been interviewed by many newspapers now, and when I'm even showing up at my own openings, the newspapers don't know where to find me. They don't know who I am. They don't know what I look like. They don't know my background. They didn't know anything. So a lot of me, I guess putting up a bio on the site and letting people know a little bit who I am, I think it actually attracts them to the work a little bit closer rather than being so standoffish. They feel a little more personal about it because there's a person there.
It makes sense.
Kind of let go.
It's been a trend, at least in the last year, that I've seen more and more street artists sort of release that identity, so to speak. And it wasn't that way when I started this project. I thought it was really quite amazing. There was a lot of sort of, you know, who are you, what are you asking, you know, a little bit of background search on myself before, you know, sort of, you know, meeting me or even talking on the phone. So
your
transition has been sort of a good example of that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably a good place then. Is there anything else you want to mention about your work?
I don't know.
Well, how about this? I mean, I really appreciate the candor and kindness that you showed me. you were very, very helpful early on in this project, and I appreciate it very much. If folks want to learn more about your work, where could you direct them?
DesireObtainCherish.com.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, Jonathan, I wish you the best of luck. And, again, we thank you for the music that you provide for this show as well. So,
Of course. My pleasure.
We're obviously fans of yours. So, well, great. Let me hold on, and I'll finish up here. So if any of you are out there in Radio Land interested in future guest updates, please make sure to follow us on our Facebook page. It's Stay Up Los Angeles Street Art. Until then, we'll be here next Monday at 9:30 a.m., and, of course, you can listen to us online. But we'll let the music of Desire, Obtain, Cherish take us out. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.